Welcome to NTD Evening News. Our top story tonight, G7 leaders calling out China for supporting Russia and harming the global economy through unfair trade practices. What's in the final statement from G7 leaders and how's President Biden working to counter the communist regime? Iris Tao reports. The U.S. and Ukraine swiftly reject conditions by Russia to end the war in Ukraine. That's as an American attack submarine arrives in Cuba, countering Russian naval presence on the island off the coast of Florida. The Justice Department makes a decision on contempt charges against Attorney General Merrick Garland. Find out what they are saying about the charges. Another momentous ruling from the Supreme Court striking down a ban on rapid-fire bump stocks, what this means, and a closer look at three of the court's anticipated rulings. Arlene Richards reports. And families of the Sandy Hook school shooting are closer to receiving funds from radio talk show host Alex Jones. A federal judge approves the liquidation of his assets.
This is NTD Evening News, live from our NTD global headquarters in New York City. Here is Tiffany Meyer.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us tonight. Group of seven leaders turning their focus to China on the final day of their summit in Italy. They hammer the communist regime over its support for Russia and harmful trade practices that threaten the global economy. NTD's White House correspondent Iris Tao reports from Italy.
The final joint statement from the G7 summit here in Italy really shows how leaders of the world's seven wealthiest democracies are now creating a united front against an increasingly aggressive and ambitious Chinese communist regime. The G7 leaders, including President Biden, issued their starkest warning yet to China over support for Russia, accusing it of enabling Russia's war in Ukraine. The strong language comes after President Biden called out Beijing on Thursday.
China is not supplying weapons, but the ability to produce those weapons and the technology available to do it. So it is, in fact, helping Russia.
The U.S. this week expanded sanctions to stop China from supplying Russia with materials used in the war. A senior administration official told us tonight that it marked a key shift in U.S. sanctions strategy. In addition to China's ties with Russia, the G7 leaders here are also toughening up against China's unfair trade practices, saying China's, quote, leading to global spillovers, market distortions, and harmful overcapacity. It comes after the EU just days ago announced new tariffs on Chinese EVs and after President Biden just last month announced massive tariff hikes on Chinese steel, EVs, and semiconductors.
The Chinese government subsidized them and subsidized them heavily. It's not competition, it's cheating. And we've seen damage here in America.
The joint statement also hammers China on its militarization in the South China Sea, malicious cyber activity around the world, and the human rights situation in Tibet, Xinjiang, and Hong Kong. And President Biden is now on his way back to the U.S. after his three-day trip to Italy. He'll be attending a campaign fundraiser in California this weekend. Reporting from Bari, Italy, Iris Tao, NTD News.
Russian President Vladimir Putin today setting conditions to end the war. Ukraine and the U.S. already declined the deal. That says tensions in Cuba keep rising. NTD's international correspondent Arian Pozdar has the story.
Russian President Vladimir Putin on Friday gave conditions to end the war in Ukraine. He said Ukraine has to drop its NATO ambitions, hand over all of four provinces claimed by Russia, and demilitarize itself. He added that Western sanctions against Russia must also end. Ukraine quickly rejected the offer, saying it would amount to surrender. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin also commented.
You know, Putin has illegally occupied sovereign Ukrainian territory. He is not in any position to dictate to Ukraine what they must do to bring about a peace.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Friday said even if Ukraine accepted the deal, Russia wouldn't stop the aggressions.
In 2014, when Russian occupation started, there was talk about Crimea and Donbas. Today he is talking about four regions he calls Ukrainian lands, Russian territories.
And at the same time, NATO seems to be preparing for the possibility of former President Trump returning to the White House.
We have agreed on a plan that sets out how NATO will lead the coordination of security assistance and training.
By doing so, the alliance would be able to continue with its support for Ukraine, even if there's less commitment from the US. That's as tensions between the US and Russia keep rising. An American attack submarine arrived at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba on Friday, and a Canadian Navy patrol ship sailed into Havana in support. That's after Russian warships arrived on the island, which lies just 100 miles off the coast of Florida, earlier this week. This comes as G7 leaders on Thursday agreed to loan Ukraine $50 billion backed by profits from Russian assets frozen abroad. And on Friday, Putin commented on that decision.
Theft will certainly remain theft, and it will not go unpunished.
Putin also said the world had reached a point of no return regarding global security.
Obviously, we are witnessing the collapse of the Euro-Atlantic security system. Today, it simply does not exist. It must actually be created anew.
Putin previously said tensions between the US and Russia are at the highest they've been since the Cold War. Arian Pastar, NTD News.
A developing situation with contempt charges against Attorney General Merrick Garland, the Justice Department announcing that they will not pursue charges against their boss. The DOJ says in a letter to the House, quote, the department has determined that the responses by Attorney General Garland to the subpoenas issued by the committees did not constitute a crime. This comes just days after the House voted along party lines to hold Garland in contempt of Congress. It was for refusing to turn over audio recordings of President Biden's interviews with former special counsel Robert Hur. The DOJ says Garland is shielded from prosecution because Biden asserted executive privilege over the recordings. This effectively closes the case. The Supreme Court today striking down a Trump-era ban on rapid-fire bump stocks. It's one of three decisions released on Friday. But as the court heads into its final few weeks of this term, a number of cases are still undecided. Here to tell all us about it is NTD's Arlene Richards at the News Hub.
Tiffany, the Supreme Court today decided in a 6-3 decision that a bump stock does not transform a firearm into an automatic weapon. Because the device requires you to re-engage the trigger for every shot, the court said it is not a machine gun. The court heard 61 cases this term. Six more cases were decided over the last 2 days, leaving just over 20 more cases to be heard. Let's take a look at some of the more key cases that they have yet to decide. Presidential immunity, the January 6 obstruction charges, and government oversight of social media. Let's start with the presidential immunity case. Former President Trump is seeking presidential immunity in the D.C. election interference case. The question before the court is, can a former president be tried on criminal charges? Special counsel Jack Smith has charged Trump with conspiring to overturn the 2020 election results. Trump says that because he was president at the time of the alleged actions, he should have immunity. The lower courts have said that Trump's actions were not presidential. Both the district court and the court of appeals have decided that he does not deserve immunity. They say that because his acts were private, they were not presidential and therefore he should not have immunity. They also said that because he is no longer the president, he should be treated like any other defendant. But the Supreme Court seems skeptical of the lower court's ruling. Conservative justices are concerned that federal crimes can be used to target political opponents. The court left open the possibility that the trial could go forward because the government argued that this case is about private acts rather than his official conduct. Next is the January 6th defendant once obstruction charges dropped. Former Pennsylvania police officer James Fisher is one of hundreds of individuals who were charged with obstruction for the January 6th Capitol breach. His attorney says obstruction charges used against him is typically seen in congressional investigations and evidence. The question before the court is, does the law apply to unrelated acts? Fisher says the obstruction charge should be dismissed because it is intended to apply to evidence tampering. Trump also faces obstruction charges in his D.C. election interference case as well as in the Georgia case. Trump could benefit if the court rules in Fisher's favor and have his charges dropped as well. But the justices seem split on how to remedy this case. The conservative justices question whether the federal prosecutors went too far in bringing obstruction charges against hundreds of participants in the Capitol breach, while liberal justices seem more favorable to the Justice Department's decision. And some of the justices favored a middle approach. Next is the government oversight of social media posts. There are three cases before the Supreme Court. Two cases involve laws in Texas and Florida that limit how social media companies can regulate content. The third case involves Republican-led states that have sued the Biden administration for blocking controversial issues on social media, such as COVID-19 and election integrity. The question before the court is, can the government monitor social media posts? The appeals court said that the government can't coerce social media platforms to take down posts the government doesn't like. Justices heard the case in mid-March, and they seem likely to side with the Biden administration. Many justices expressed concern that the government wouldn't be able to communicate with social media companies about other issues, such as public health, national security, and election integrity. They also questioned whether or not what the government did was unconstitutional. So these are the three key cases that are pending before the Supreme Court: presidential immunity, January 6 obstruction charges, and government oversight of social media. The court is also considering other cases, such as whether or not a domestic violence offender can own a gun, and homelessness issues. Tiff?
The personal assets of radio talk show host Alex Jones will soon be liquidated. A federal bankruptcy court judge approved it today. Jones has to pay the lawsuit judgments brought by the families of the victims of the Sandy Hook school shooting. Jones and his company, Free Speech Systems, filed for bankruptcy protection in 2022. According to court documents, Jones personally has about $9 million in assets, including his home worth more than $2.5 million. Relatives of many victims of the 2012 Sandy Hook school shooting won lawsuit judgments of more than $1.4 billion in Connecticut and $49 million in Texas. The judge has not yet ruled on liquidating Jones's company. The relatives said they were traumatized by Jones's comments and his followers' actions denying that the shooting happened. Coming up, a happy birthday to the U.S. Army. We'll tell you about the festivities and hear about the values the Army represents. And the likes tab is now hidden on social media platform X. We'll have more on the app's update and how users are reacting when we come back. Welcome back. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Today is the U.S. Army's 249th birthday. New recruits, current service members, and veterans alike gathered in New York City to celebrate the milestone. NTD's Fiona G attended the festivities.
June 14th is the 249th birthday of the U.S. Army, and a birthday party has been held in Times Square to celebrate the event. The U.S. Army is the oldest branch of the U.S. military and is in fact older than the United States itself. Proud service members share the history and values of the Army, as well as what it means to them to serve.
The Army has defended the nation and its interests for the last 249 years. And so we're proud to keep that tradition going here in New York City. The New York all the way through World War II and Korea was the hub of the United States Army. So we have this great tradition of service in New York City.
So the Army values, one of those are loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, and personal courage. So I think setting the example of what it means to selflessly serve, putting the nation and the others before yourself, is a good example to put before the public.
I've done something meaningful. I've changed people's lives all the world. And being a recruiting commander is my most special job, because now I have a chance to bring in the next generations of soldiers so they can serve this nation.
Onlookers shared how they felt watching the festivities and learning about the values of the Army.
I would say thank you very much to the U.S. Army, and I'm very much appreciative of U.S. Army.
I've seen the event over there going on around an hour ago. So far, everything has been so good. Keep protecting the U.S., I guess. Happy birthday to the U.S. Army.
The United States Army continues to uphold the theme of honoring the past and protecting the future as it raises the next generation of leaders. Fiona G, NTD News.
The House of Representatives has passed the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2025. They are now set to vote on next year's budget for the State Department, Agriculture Department, and the Food and Drug Administration. NTD's Washington correspondent Luis Martinez has the details.
Six Democrats voted with Republicans to authorize $830 billion of defense spending for fiscal year 2025. House Republicans managed to keep the National Defense Authorization Act of fiscal year 2025 within the limits of the Fiscal Responsibility Act of 2024, meaning that defense spending for next year increased by less than 1%. Republicans managed to do so by cutting down DEI, climate change, and abortion funding. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson celebrated the passage of the bill on social media by stating that next year's NDAA refocuses defense spending to counter the threats of communist China, Iran, and Russia. The bill redirects approximately $20 billion of defense spending towards countering communist China and securing the southern border. 199 Democrats did not agree.
First of all, I opposed it last year. I'm going to oppose it again. I think there's a lot of horrible Republican amendments in it, and I think it's really unfortunate that they're trying to legislate, you know, women's right to choose, rights for gay people in, a really important authorization. So I think it's really unfortunate.
This week, the House Appropriations Committee also passed their proposed budget for State Department operations, agriculture, rural development, and the Federal Drug Administration for fiscal year 2025. State Department operations budget was reduced by 11%, while agriculture bill was reduced by 1.4%. I caught up with Congressman Andy Harris, who sits in the House Appropriations Committee and is the chairman of the subcommittee in agriculture, and he felt satisfied with the proposed bill. Let's listen.
You're satisfied with the budget cuts? Did you get everything that you wanted done on the bill?
We made some modest reductions, just like every American family is doing.
Do you think Democrats in the Senate might be on board with the proposed House bill?
I don't think they're going to be on board with the fact that we actually trimmed the budget a little bit. They want to spend more.
House Republicans do not expect their appropriation bills to be picked up by the Senate. Instead, the Republicans I spoke with argue that these appropriation bills are the opening salvo of long protracted negotiations in order to reach a settlement for next year's budget. Reporting from Washington, D.C., Luis Eduardo Martinez, NTD News.
More problems for plane maker Boeing as a new investigation reveals the company may be inadvertently using impure metal on some of its aircraft. The FAA investigation comes after a parts supplier discovered small holes in the material from corrosion. Boeing reported to the FAA that the documentation for the titanium acquired through one of their distributors may have been falsified. The plane maker said it was removing any such parts from airplanes prior to delivery and added there is no impact to safety. A new report says home ownership is impossibly unaffordable in several major U.S. cities. NTD's Don Ma tells us what that means.
Several cities on the West Coast and in Hawaii are now considered impossibly unaffordable. Five cities made the list for most unaffordable places to buy a home, according to the annual Demographic International Housing Affordability Report. Unsurprisingly, the most expensive U.S. cities are in California. San Jose, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and San Diego all made the top 10. Honolulu came in 6 out of 94 major markets surveyed in 8 countries. The report measures affordability by dividing the median price of a house by the gross median household income. It also identified the most affordable cities of the 94 major markets in the U.S. They are Pittsburgh, Rochester, and St. Louis. Meanwhile, the top impossibly unaffordable city in the world identified as Hong Kong. Meanwhile, working remotely comes with increased flexibility and a better work-life balance, but you might want to make sure you're actually working. Some Wells Fargo employees just found out the hard way. This week, Wells Fargo revealed that more than a dozen workers were fired for simulating keyboard activity. In other words, they were pretending to work, like using a device called a mouse jiggler that keeps your screen active while you're away. It's not clear what the employees were doing instead of working. A bank spokesperson declined to offer more details about the firings, saying only, quote, Wells Fargo holds employees to the highest standards and does not tolerate unethical behavior. Bloomberg reported the terminations via filing to the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. Wells Fargo's crackdown on remote workers comes as the bank works to repair its brand. Since 2016, Wells Fargo has spent billions of dollars settling cases related to a scheme that led to over 2 million fake accounts being opened without consumers' consent. And gas prices are cheaper than last summer and miles away from where they were peaked 2 years ago. AAA says the national average for regular gas stood at $3.46 a gallon on Thursday. This is down $1.56 from the national record of $5.02 set in June of 2022. It's also down 13 cents from this point last year. Steadily lowering prices since mid-April have helped take pressure off cash-strapped consumers. And the cooling prices at the pump have also played a central role in helping to drive down inflation.
Elon Musk might still not get paid, even though shareholders have voted to reinstate his pay package. The legal system is standing in his way. Here's the story.
The Delaware legal system still stands between Elon Musk and his $46 billion pay package. Shareholders voted to reinstate the package Thursday. But Delaware Judge Kathleen McCormick's decision to invalidate the package still stands. Tesla hopes to have her change her ruling.
We've seen the filings that Elon Musk hasn't received a salary compensation since 2018. Yet Tesla continues to do well while he's in charge.
Attorney Katie Charleston says it's a matter of when Musk gets paid. Not if. Regardless of what Judge McCormick decides, the losing side is likely to appeal. Attorney Greg Varallo, who represents the investor suing Tesla, told NTD, quote, We still have work to do in the court and in the Supreme Court.
Everything can make its way up to the U.S. Supreme Court eventually. So there is a process, and it would stay in Delaware until it gets to a federal circuit court and then could ultimately end up in the United States Supreme Court for sure.
Charleston says one of Musk's advantages is that major shareholders Vanguard switched sides. It now supports Musk's pay package, citing Tesla's performance.
Social media platform X has taken away the likes tab for all users. Now the only other person who can see who liked a post is the post's author. NTD's Jason Blair brings us more on the update and how users are reacting.
X made the announcement on Wednesday, and when many users logged in, they saw a pop-up saying, liking more posts will make your For You feed better, suggesting that the change is to encourage more engagement around the site and to be able to show people more content that they want to see. The reactions have been mixed. Many users expressed confusion about the change, including a technology expert I spoke with who doesn't like the direction the site is going.
Yeah, it's just really odd, all the things that X is doing. I mean, I don't understand why they are privatizing likes on the platform, but it definitely is trying to evolve into a pay-to-play service as far as social media is concerned. So,
many users posted jokes in response, like pizza chain Papa John's, saying, quote, Since Twitter likes are private now, like this if you think pineapple belongs on pizza. On the day of the announcement, Elon Musk posted a chart and said that there was a massive increase in likes since the change was made. X is the only major social media site that had a separate tab with the user's likes history visible to the public. Before the change, hiding likes used to be an option only for premium subscribers. However, now all users have private likes with no other options. The like count for post is still shown, however, no one's able to see who likes a specific post except for that post creator. Now, this is one difference X now has from other popular platforms like Facebook and Instagram, where users are able to see who likes another user's post. Jason Blair, NTD News.
Buy Now, Pay Later has become increasingly popular for American shoppers, but the service does come with some risks. NTD's Andrew Thomas spoke with an experienced consumer finance analyst to learn more.
Buy now, pay later is an attractive proposition for shoppers. But third-party companies offer these payment plans, and that can make things complicated for consumers and retailers. A new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau rule hopes to address the issue.
There's a middleman involved. Sometimes you've returned the merchandise to the retailer, and the buy now, pay later company is still asking for its cut, or maybe it's a different kind of dispute. Maybe it's that something was damaged or didn't arrive as promised. Credit cards have very strict, organized dispute processes, and buy now, pay later is now going to have to abide by the same rules.
Why is the CFPB mandating this rule now? Has it been a long time coming?
It's more of a clarification. Like, it's one of these things that's been out there for a while, but it wasn't entirely clear if buy now, pay later fit under this umbrella. That's actually very emblematic of the credit bureau situation as well, because it's kind of a square peg, round hole.
Do you think the new rule will have any unintended consequences?
One would be if it becomes more expensive to borrow because companies have to raise costs because they're spending more on compliance or customer service, or maybe they crack down a bit more on returns and they frown upon people that are returning too much merchandise.
In 2022, the CFPB found that more than 13% of buy now, pay later transactions involved a disputed charge or a return. In 2021, consumers disputed or returned $1.8 billion in transactions at five large buy now, pay later companies.
There is that whole friendly fraud issue, too, where you dispute even legitimate transactions. You should always try to work it out with the merchant first. If something didn't fit or was damaged or never arrived, don't go right to the credit card dispute or the buy now, pay later dispute. It's better to try to work it out with the retailer.
Buy now, pay later payment plans are usually marketed as zero or low interest. But Rossman gives us a friendly reminder. Buy now, pay later still means taking on debt.
So it's not $200 anymore, right? It's just four easy payments of $50. That's what they want you to think. It is kind of that infomercial thing about buy now. There's often an instant impulse buy kind of tendency, especially online. Sometimes people can overspend.
According to an April Bankrate survey, more than half of buy now, pay later customers have experienced at least one issue with the payment plan. The most reported problem? Spending too much. Andrew Thomas, NTD News.
Coming up, from the G7 to Russia, Gaza, and Iran, a guest joins us to discuss the U.S. approach to foreign policy after the break. Welcome back. If you're just joining us now, here are some today's top headlines. In a 6-3 ruling, the Supreme Court struck down the federal ban on bump stocks on guns. Bump stocks allow a shooter to convert a semi-automatic rifle into a weapon that can fire at a rate of hundreds of rounds a minute. The Trump administration imposed the ban following the 2017 Las Vegas shooting. A federal judge ordered the liquidation of radio show host Alex Jones's personal assets. This was to help pay the $1.5 billion he owes to families of the Sandy Hook school shooting victims in his defamation case. The future of Jones's InfoWars media platform remains uncertain, as the judge has yet to decide on its separate bankruptcy case. World leaders discussed migration and China's unfair trade practices on the final day of the G7 summit. The summit's final statement pledged support for Ukraine, called for a ceasefire in Gaza, and announced new initiatives to fight human smuggling. Russian President Vladimir Putin gave conditions to end the war in Ukraine. He said Ukraine has to drop its NATO ambitions, hand over all of four provinces claimed by Russia, and demilitarize itself. The U.S. and Ukraine declined the offer, saying Putin is in no position to set conditions for peace. Joining me now to react to the latest developments in Ukraine and at G7 is Gerard Felitti. He's a Middle East affairs analyst, political strategist, and attorney. Gerard, thanks for joining us. Great to see you again. Now, to begin, the G7 nations are warning Iran not to advance its nuclear enrichment program. That's after a UN nuclear watchdog report noted Iran's uranium is now at 60% purity. That's close to the 90% considered to be weapons grade. Now, the G7 warning that they would be ready to enforce new measures if Tehran were to transfer ballistic missiles to Russia. What should be done to effectively deter Iran?
Well, that's a very difficult decision to make because things that have been tried so far have not really worked. The Obama administration, as we remember, engaged in a deal with Iran, essentially offering them money and the ability to make small quantities of enriched uranium in exchange for a promise not to make a nuclear weapon. But that is not something that was ultimately upheld. The best arsenal right now consists of trade sanctions, which have already been imposed, but also going in secondary sanctions and tightening the noose on Iranian's economy and oil exports should it not be deterred from advancing its nuclear weapons program. That's really the only tool that might be effective in dealing with this.
And the U.S. State Department said that Iran's move to defy the U.N. agency signals that, quote, Iran aims to continue expanding its nuclear program in ways that have no credible peaceful purpose. This is as the conflict in Gaza threatens to expand. How seriously should we take the threat of nuclear war?
Well, the threat of Iran having a nuclear weapon is a very big one. Iran is not known to be a stabilizing power in the Middle East or in the world, and it has been very aggressive in its provocations against Israel and against the United States, using proxies to do its bidding. A nuclear Iran would be a danger, not just to the Middle East, but to the whole world, because precisely they are unpredictable in how and whether they would use such a weapon. Whether this would actually turn into a nuclear war is hard to give credence to. I think that we have seen Israel and the United States be more than willing to take preemptive measures against Iran should that threat come to light. That would not be a nuclear war against Iran, but rather a strategic strike to disable their progress. And that is something that could escalate into a regional war, albeit not a nuclear one.
Now, switching gears a bit to the Russia-Ukraine conflict, Russia has laid out its conditions for a peace deal with Ukraine. Those conditions include for Ukraine to drop its NATO ambitions, hand over all four provinces claimed by Russia, and demilitarize itself. Now, Ukraine and the U.S. have rejected this. What do you make of these conditions?
Well, it's not unexpected that Ukraine would reject this. This is really nothing more than acknowledging Russia's aggression and rewarding it by giving it land and demilitarizing so that future aggression would be unchecked. This is really a danger not just to Ukraine, but to members of NATO who would face additional risk from Russia should it become even more emboldened to strike against Poland or Romania or Czechoslovakia, or, you know, any country in the West, really. What we should make of this is there is a really big concern in the United States, in France, in Germany, that if there is a change in willingness on the part of the West to continue supporting Ukraine, this might force Ukraine into a peace that it would otherwise not be wise to accept. And this would weaken NATO, and this would weaken the ability of Europe to defend itself. So really, the Western powers have a lot of explaining to do to convince their citizens that this war must continue and why it's so important to counter Russian aggression.
On that note, where do you see this conflict heading?
This conflict is not looking like it will resolve anytime soon. We can expect that as the summer progresses, both Ukraine and Russia will launch counterattacks against one another, seeking to dominate the battlefield. We are seeing increasing use of drone technology, increasing use of long-range weapons. Ukraine also will benefit now because the American Congress did finally decide to vote and approve an aid package, so we will begin seeing more weapons and even F-16 fighters being delivered to Ukraine later this year, presumably. And this will strengthen its position. So this war is not going to end anytime soon unless it's ended by Russia. Russia has every opportunity to withdraw its forces and acknowledge that this was a mistake. Is it likely to do so? Not anytime soon. The question is whether Vladimir Putin will outlast this war.
And Gerard, given the tensions we are seeing around the world, how much do you see foreign policy playing into this year's election? Normally, foreign policy isn't a big factor, but is that different this year?
Foreign policy has always been a big issue in American politics, but what's different in this election cycle is there's a lot of emphasis on the economy and domestic issues. And the Republican Party is really pushing more for an America First policy, not ignoring foreign issues, but placing more of an emphasis on domestic policy. There's a much more willingness to disengage from events like the Ukraine war or support for other allies in the world. And this is something that really needs to be countered. And I think that we will see increased emphasis on foreign policy see as the debates progress, as the campaign progresses, and as Americans realize the importance of maintaining world stability and how important that is for the American economy and for our continued perseverance of democracy. So foreign issues will play a large role in the election, but I don't think that Americans have woken up to that fact yet.
Gerard Felitti, Middle East Affairs Analyst and Political Strategist, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. A pleasure.
Former President Trump turns 78 today, with President Biden being 81. The two major party candidates running for president this year are the oldest ever to seek the office. In a Reuters Ipsos poll in February, 78% of respondents, including 71% of Democrats, said Biden is already too old to work in government. 53% said Trump was too old. Trump is scheduled to speak today at a birthday party in West Palm Beach, Florida, organized by a group of supporters. Trump and Biden are neck and neck in national opinion polls, with Trump ahead in several battleground states that could decide November's contest. Biden reacted to Trump's birthday by posting on X, quote, "Take it from one old guy to another. Age is just a number. This election, however, is a choice." Coming up, UFC star Conor McGregor's long-awaited return to the octagon is on hold following an injury. NTD's Dave Martin joins us to explain. And it's time to celebrate Dad. We'll take a look at some last-minute items that are perfect for Father's Day when we come back. Welcome back. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Now for your sports news, we're joined by NTD's Dave Martin. Dave, a lot going on today, but let's start in golf, as Tiger Woods is battling to make the weekend cut at the U.S. Open. Where do things stand now?
Woods is most likely not going to make the weekend cut. Now, he was through two rounds, he's at 7 over par. The projected cut is going to be more like 3 or 4 over. I think the last I saw was 4 over. Now, the projected cut can't be finalized until everyone's actually finished playing. Now, this is the projected cut, really just the top 60 players and ties after two rounds. So he's probably out. Now, this is out of 156 players. Now, looking at some other notables, world number two, Rory McIlroy, who started the day in a tie for first, shot a 2 over 72. That dropped him to sixth place, two shots behind the leader. Meanwhile, the leader is Ludvig Åberg at 6 under. Now, this event will conclude on Sunday.
Looking at news from the UFC, former champion Conor McGregor will not be fighting at UFC 303 later this month as originally planned. This is due to an injury. Has his fight been rescheduled?
You know, they haven't announced when or if this match is going to be rescheduled, but this is obviously a big loss for the UFC. I mean, McGregor, even though he hasn't fought in 3 years, he's still their biggest star. And this event was scheduled for June 29 in Las Vegas. It's already sold out, and according to UFC CEO Dana White, the event was on pace to set a UFC live gate record of more than $20 million in revenue. But this fight between McGregor and Michael Chandler, it was a non-title welterweight bout. It's too bad it's off because these two have a bit of a history. For McGregor, though, I mean, he last fought in July of 2021 when he suffered a broken leg in a loss to Dustin Poirier. And since boxing Floyd Mayweather Jr. in 2017, he's only fought 4 UFC matches since, and he's lost 3 of them. In any case, UFC 303 will continue. They've got 13 other bouts planned for that event.
Shifting gears to NHL news, Florida beat Edmonton last night to take a 3-0 lead in the Stanley Cup final. What are the Oilers' chances of coming back?
Well, not very good, but there are actually a few precedents for here. This 4 NHL teams in the history of the league have actually come back from an 0-3 deficit. Of course, that's out of 210 opportunities. I mean, obviously, it's tough winning 4 straight with their backs against the wall. To do it, Edmonton is certainly going to have to get their power play going. Now, they were 0-3 in their power play last night. They are 0-10 in this series. And that's after the first 3 rounds of the playoffs, they were shooting 37% in the power play. So it's a big loss for them, because Florida's penalty kill unit has been doing so well. So is their goalie, Sergei Bobrovsky. So this will be game 4 Saturday night. If Florida wins, this will be their first title in that franchise's history.
And tonight we have a similar situation in the NBA playoffs, as Boston plays Dallas with a 3-0 lead themselves. What do the Mavericks need to do to get back into the series?
Well, unlike in the NHL, no team is ever, no NBA team anyway, has ever come back from an 0-3 deficit to win a series. If Dallas is going to do it, they have to get Kyrie Irving, you know, the same effort he got. He gave him game three when he scored 35 points, was a game high, hit half his shots. Now, they also kind of, Boston kind of exploited Luka Doncic in that game. He's one of the best offensive players, but they made him work on defense. They kept switching so that he would have to switch on to whoever was, who had the ball, and he's not the best on-ball defender in the league. The Celtics are equipped to do that, though, because pretty much everyone on their team can shoot at the three-pointer, so you really have to switch if they're gonna do a screen like that. So anyway, I think Dallas is actually gonna pull off the upset, minor upset, and win tonight, but I think Boston will still take the series. Tonight's game, though, starts at 8:30, will be played in Dallas.
Well, Davis, always, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Tiff.
Father's Day is this weekend, and many people are on the hunt for the perfect gifts to show their appreciation. NTD's Christina Corona highlights some of this year's popular picks.
Father's Day is just around the corner, but there's still plenty of time to find the perfect gift for Dad. Whether he's a fashion-forward gentleman or a backyard grill master, there's something special that will make his day. If your dad is more into outdoor activities and cooking, barbecue equipment could be the ideal choice. From high-quality grills to essential tools, you'll find everything he needs for a fantastic grilling season. Jennifer Young, who runs a gift store in Seattle, Washington, says,
"Dads who are grill masters, barbecue companion, barbecue books, lots of great cooking books for dad."
Other great gift ideas can be a wallet, a set of golf clubs, outdoor camping gear, a portable speaker, or a great book.
We have this is a great one for getting a dad is the family bucket list, because then it shows that this is something you want to do with your dad as a family, make these memories together.
You can even consider classic options like stylish ties and sophisticated suits that will elevate his wardrobe and add a touch of elegance to his look. These timeless pieces are sure to make him feel appreciated and dapper. A personalized gift that reflects his hobbies and interests can be a meaningful and thoughtful present, showing that you have put effort into choosing something specifically tailored to his passions and activities. We asked several people what they are getting their dad this year for Father's Day.
My dad's a big country fan, so what I did was I got him some Luke Combs tickets, which is actually where we're going tomorrow.
On Sunday morning, we're going to get Menudo, and then on Monday night, we're going to the Dodger game because he's been a lifelong Dodger fan, so we always go to games as much as we can.
If you're like me, you try to get your dad tickets to his favorite sporting event. And if all else fails, spending time with him is always a great option. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Christina Corona, NTD News, El Monte.
And that's all for today's news. For around-the-clock coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Tiffany Meyer. Good night.